Hi, I'm Michael Senoff, founder and CEO of HardToFindSeminars.com. For the last 5 years, I've interviewed the world's best business and marketing minds. Along the way, I've created a successful publishing business all from home from my two-car garage. When my first child was born, he was very sick, and it was then that I knew I had to have a business that I could operate from home. Now my challenge is to build the world's largest free resource for online downloadable MP3 audio business interviews. I knew I needed a site that contained strategies, solutions, and inside angles to help you live better, to save and make more money, to stay healthier, and to get more out of life. I've learned a lot in the last 5 years, and today I'm going to show you the skills you need to survive.
But those people have invested money, highly motivated, disillusioned, and you can come to those people and be their knight in shining armor and really show them how to get their product into Home Depot.
Hi, this is Michael Senoff with HardToFindSeminars.com. In the next 50-minute interview, you're going to hear some great examples about how to develop and create and get your own product into Home Depot. Enough said, let's get started.
Well, I had mentioned to you that Harvey Brody, who's an acquaintance slash friend of mine, he was a professor at USC and also UCLA in regards to marketing classes. He's in his early 70s, owns four or five companies that have been very, very successful. He was financially secure quite some time ago, but decided he just liked continued work. Like I said, he has several products, gotten to know each other, because I'm working on a project right now for a company called Hampton Brink. And he mentioned to me, he said, John, you give all this information away. He said, these are why these companies are coming to you and these people are coming to you, because you're just handing it to them. And so he had given me a phone number, and that's how it led to you. And so at this point, I developed a product about 4 years ago from inception and worked with DuPont on all the R&Ds. We developed a product. I managed to get it into Home Depot immediately.
What's the product?
It's a dry film lubricant. The polymer itself, or the lubricant itself, was developed by DuPont at the request of NASA. It's used on the space shuttle to lubricate circuit breakers and this and that. It's completely dry. It's a really very low coefficient of friction. Once you put it on, it can last up to 3 years.
It's like a powder?
No, it's not a powder at all. It's actually a polymer. It's an aerosol can. And the delivery system in the aerosol can, once it's delivered, the delivery system immediately dries off within a matter of seconds. Polymer behind.
So is it kind of like a WD-40, but a dry version?
Well, WD-40 is not a lubricant. WD-40 is a petroleum product. This is not a petroleum product. It's like a citric Teflon. And it's completely clear. You can spray it on a piece of plastic and you can see it. But yet, if you spray this in the cracks of a window or a keyway or a lock or a hinge or whatever, it'll immediately stop squeaking. And that window will move 50% easier for up to 3 years.
What's it called at Home Depot?
It's called Easy Glide 50.
Easy Glide RD50?
You've been in Home Depot stores. What happened is my product retails for $5.95. The margins that Depot works off is 43%, so they're making about $2.50 a can. WD-40, who is probably my largest competitor, and I say competitor, and I'll explain that in a minute, their product sells for $1.76, and Depot makes 17 cents. Granted, they do sell 100 cans a week, 125 cans a week at 17 cents. Yeah, we could go to McDonald's and have lunch. Whereas they sell 100 cans of my product, they made $250. So immediately what happened, either store management or division management recognized the fact that WD-40 is selling 120 cans a week. I'm only selling 60 or 70, but the 60 or 70 is 250 far surpass their profit, selling 120 cans of WD-40. So immediately they march me up to the front of the store. They give me what they call an end cap, which is at the end of the aisle, 4 feet wide. We designed a wire type thing we call a shadow box. Holds 150 cans of POP all over it. And our sales have continued to grow over the last 4 years. In fact, our last 6 months have all been record months. What happened a year ago, Depot does not like single SKU vendors.
So what's a single SKU vendor?
A vendor that only supplies one product. So a SKU meaning a stock keeping unit. So they look at companies and say, well, we're buying 100 different items from this company. So they've got 40 different or 20 different items. It might be spray paint or whatever it might be, but there's several SKUs for that company if they place orders for. They don't like companies only supply one item. It costs them as much to do paperwork and cut checks and everything for one item company as it does 100 item company.
Now, at what point were you made aware of that?
Depot went to a company by the name of Primeline down San Bernardino. They did about $40 million a year with Depot. They have about 180 SKUs in each Depot store. Go into a Depot store and you go into the hardware section and you see where all these parts are for replacement parts for sliding glass doors and screen doors and door viewers. That's who Primeline is.
There's like a red packaging. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like I said, they have about 180 different items in each Home Depot store nationwide.
Depot went to them and had them give you a call to buy it out?
Right.
And that's what happened?
Right.
So Depot said, you may want to check this product out. We'd like you to handle it. This guy, it's his only product. They gave him the numbers. This guy could see that it was a moneymaker, and they made you an offer.
Exactly.
Okay, so you sold it out to them.
I sold it out to them. I am the manager of that division of the company that actually bought the company, which was called Easy Buy Corporation.
Are you under contract where you have to work with them?
No.
So you could walk away from it, never worry about it again?
Right. But I do get to pay the royalty over a period of 10 years, and I get paid out the buyout over a period of 5 years. But I do work for them and paid a salary. Like I said, what happened is in my travels and people have gotten to know me, this business acquaintances, so on and so forth, everybody's question was, how did you get this into the store? How did you do this? How did you not only get it into the store, how did you get it in these end caps in the front of the stores? How did you get 11 different locations in the stores? Who came up with the packaging? Who came up with the marketing plan? How do you improvise all this? How is all this kept in order? Where do you find service companies? Where do you find sales reps? Do you want to get into Home Depot? Who do you call? That's the biggest thing.
What are some more questions?
Just a lot of those type of questions where some guy's got some little widget, whatever it is, and it could be a great product. He has absolutely no idea. I mean, you just don't go up to the front door of Depot and say, here's what I got. Can I put this in your store? So it's very involved, but yet it's very simple.
So what you did with your product and your success story, if you taught the little guy and they had a product that the market wanted and would sell, the little guy could basically, I don't want to say get rich overnight because it sure wasn't an overnight process, but could make some good money if they could do what you did.
Right.
Is it private information what you ended up selling it for? Okay. I was just curious.
The royalties over a period of 10 years are substantial. Let's put it that way.
Could it make you a millionaire?
It very well could.
Great.
But the money portion of it to me was not the biggest thing.
I know. Like entrepreneurs like us, it's irrelevant. It's the game.
Right. It was walking into Home Depot after I left their offices, walking into their stores a month later and seeing my product scattered all over the store. That was the highlight.
You handled all the marketing, the POP, all that. That was your responsibility.
Everything. Developed the product, literally took the pictures that are on the cans and all the POPs for the different uses, developed the displayers. Everything from A to Z. I was pretty much a one-man operation.
With Home Depot, you've got to know what they want, don't you?
Right.
So all these questions that you've just given me are things that would be included in a course on how to do this, how to get your product into Home Depot and possibly make $1 million.
Right, and not necessarily Home Depot. It could be any method.
Could be Lowe's. Could be Depot.
Where to invest, through value. I just got the product into the fishing industry. Probably going to be one of the biggest things that hit the fishing industry in years because in a fishing business, there's 100 companies making lures that they say this will catch a fish better, or this hook is better, or this reel's better. But we introduced the product to the fishing industry. I hired a gentleman who is a 2-time world champion fisherman. He is a spokesman only because of all the people he knew. It was like hiring Tiger Woods to sell your golf club. His name is Dan Kadoda. Dan is also a manufacturer's rep. He works for Shimano, the largest fishing reel manufacturer in the world. His brother, who owns the other half of the company, is all of the bicycle derailers and all the bicycle parts are all made by him. So this is who I hooked up with. And he also reps for Luma, which is like the Mercedes of fishing rods. These things sell for anywhere from $300 to $600 each.
How does it benefit a fisherman?
What they do is they spray this on their reels, they spray it on the line, everything. It enhances the casting. It's been tested by several people that write magazine articles for fishing type magazines or what have you in regard to protecting qualities of the product. I've got editorials that people have written that have been tested. in the product for quite some time. It resists any kind of rust or corrosion. It acts as a line dressing. The lines don't crack. All in all, it has a lot of attributes and a lot of benefits and features for fishing and things.
How did this all start with this product? How did you get involved in it? Were you the one who originated it, or explain the genesis?
I was in the aluminum extruding business and the plastics injection molding business. And my business the last 30 years was, I'm sure, stayed in hotels. The drapery rods that are in the ceiling that the draperies travel on, they got that little wand that sticks down, you pull the drapes back and forth.
Right.
Well, I was the manufacturer of all those component parts. I extruded the aluminum. We manufactured all the plastic component parts that went into those Travis rods. And my customers were the highest, from the Dolphins and the Mirages, and the list went on and on and on. Shipped over 15, 20,000 feet a day of just drapery tracks. I was looking for a lubricant that could be sprayed on a drapery track. It was a drapery track to be treated to ease the operation of these drapery rods. The easier they move, the less people jerked and pulled on the draperies and did damage to the draperies. So I was originally looking at Teflon, but of course Teflon has to be put on at 400 degrees. You can't put something on plastic at 400 degrees and melt it. So long and the short of the story was, I worked at DuPont, and there was a product out there that was developed for NASA, a lubricant product that was completely odorless, wouldn't leave any stains, resisted any kind of contaminants. All the attributes of the product were perfect for this type of application.
And did DuPont own it?
DuPont manufactures the polymer. DuPont doesn't manufacture any actual finished products that are sold retail. They only manufacture, for instance, carpet. They're advertised as the stain master by DuPont. Well, they offer the yarn or the polymer that's used in the polyester carpet. Now, actually manufacturing the carpet.
So what is a polymer, technically?
A polymer is the chemical name for it is PTFE. It's a very long chemical name. And what it is, it's a synthetic. So in the barrel form or the raw form, which I purchased the product, it almost looks like a Vaseline or a paste. This, in turn, is diluted with different types of solvents and everything to bring it down to where it could be put into an aerosol can. The solvents are nothing more than a delivery system for the polymer. If you were to take the polymer and just put it on your fingers, in a matter of seconds, once it's exposed to the air, it just completely dries out.
The polymer does.
Right. It dries to a solid state and leaves a coating similar to what would be on the bottom of a pot or a Teflon pan. But Teflon, of course, is put on at 400 degrees. It's a coating that's used for anti-stick.
All right, so that's how you were introduced to it, and you worked with it, and you developed it, you got it in the can, and you brought it to life.
Right. Once I had the hotel industry interested in it, and this was something that we coated our tracks with and advertised, that our drapery tracks were coated with it. Once the industry got a hold of the fact that these tracks were so much smoother and would resist drapery damage by people pulling on the drapes themselves, we became specified. In other words, Hyatt, for instance, would build a new hotel or renovating a hotel, and it included replacing the drapery rods. And on their spec sheet, their suppliers would say the only tracks would be accepted were by CDS, which was my company. We therefore came out with now an aerosol can for an aftermarket. In other words, if you had a hotel that you wanted the drapes to work really well, or spray in your locks or hinges or bifold doors or dresser track systems or anything that moved in the room, but you wanted to be completely invisible, no odor, no anything, but anything that you could make work easier would alleviate guest damage.
There's a lot of drapery damage. When these things get stuck, they rip the drapes. Is that a big problem with drapes?
Oh, yeah, definitely. One of my key businesses was also the family was in drapery business for the hotel industry for 35 years. Our biggest spread were these people that came in and yanked up those drapes. When I took over the company, I wasn't really all that interested in the sewing business as much as I was just producing these tracks and all these systems that went out to these hotels worldwide. And we did projects all over Guam and all over the Orient. And it was quite a lucrative business. It did very well.
That's interesting. Okay. So let me ask you, now you've sold the company, the Home Depot version. Are you free to market this product to other industries? Like this product you're introducing to the fishing industry, are your hands not tied with the company who bought it from you representing Home Depot, or you're free to market to other markets as you did with Home Depot?
No, they own the product.
They own the product. So you're doing marketing to the fishing industry, but they own it.
I do is through Home Depot. We got into the automotive industry. We got into the marine industry. We found out that if you paint this onto the bottom of boats, the algae wouldn't stick to it, particles wouldn't grow on it. A lot of different benefits as far as the product is concerned. But it enabled me to expand my marketing ideas, which I really wasn't able to do as a single owner of the company because you're involved in the day-to-day operations every day.
Yeah, you're running the business.
It didn't matter how well we were doing. If we wanted to introduce a product to the fishing industry, okay, fine, it's going to take us $50,000. Well, that's the $50,000 we made in the last 6 months. We're constantly pouring the money back into it as fast as we could make it.
You had the drapery rod business, but this was the first thing you really invented, totally new, and got to market?
No, I've done several.
You've always been entrepreneurial.
I've had several products that I've taken to market. I have two or three that I've sold and licensed out, which I receive royalty checks for each month. And some of them, so unrelated, you wouldn't even believe, like, the same guy that did this.
Tell me just one.
One of them was a product called Sports Seat. And what it was, it's an inflatable, it's actually one piece, but it's joined in the middle. And it was like a air mattress type of theory, but very, very thin, of course. And you see people that go to baseball games in the pocket.
And that's much better than those ones that are squares and you have to carry the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. They're really comfortable to sit on. It protected you from the cold. If the seat was cold or it was concrete or whatever.
Okay, that's great. So you invented that?
I came up with that. We private labeled it to Kodak, SeaWorld. It was a giveaway at Indy 500 by Kodak. We sold them. It was an advertisement. Oscar Mayer made them look like a package of hot dogs. The biggest customer really was from a premium business to the stadium. It was a cheap enough item to where every game was like, okay, today's bat day. It would be bat day or cap day. So this was sports seat day. What happened, a company from Anaheim came to me and they asked if they could buy the license to the product. They were in the premium business. I developed this thing for whatever reason. I don't know. I was on the phone with my brother one evening, and we started talking about something. Next thing I know, I'm talking to some company in Taiwan who's sending me samples for whatever reason. So that product has gone out of my hands. They have 100% license agreement over the product, and I get checks every month. I have done other things. I have some patents in my name that I have items that I've developed and patented. But most of the time, most of what happens is I end up selling the companies or selling the licensing out the product.
Well, you get bored and you want to sell it and move on to something else.
Just move on to something else for whatever reason.
What do you enjoy doing most? Now are you at the point where you want to teach people what you've done and help them have some success? Like if you could see down the road that you're going to be spending so many hours a day, obviously you could do more marketing of your product to other markets and have that company handle all the details of the business. And I don't know what your arrangement is, what they pay you for handling additional sales of it. Or you could create your own product and teach people how to do what you've done and have control of that product and make everything. Where do you most enjoy your future time spent?
The marketing concept. In other words, developing a product, developing the packaging. I know where the contacts are. Most people, they've got a product, but they don't know how to get it in. For me, it's just the opposite. The work is in developing the packaging so the consumer will pick it up, developing how it's going to be marketed in the stores. Once all that's done, the easy part is getting into the store. Once you got this, that's secret to where to go and how the system works and what they want to see. You have to understand what Depot wants from this product. In other words, just going there and putting on a shelf at ankle height and hoping somebody's going to pick it up, you're dreaming. It's not going to ever happen.
If you know how to introduce a product to the Home Depots in these stores, are they hungry? Are they looking for new products that'll make them money?
Oh, definitely.
They're just waiting for someone to come to them with something already done.
Definitely. I've got my second product going in the Home Depot, which is going to be probably within the next 30 to 60 days. And this is 1,400 stores. First-time orders are just overwhelming. I got endorsements from Fine Woodworking Magazine and professionals. And so that, to me, is developing all these different areas of marketing as far as endorsements and exposure in the stores, not so much getting it actually in there.
Well, you know, developing an information product is no different than what you've been doing. If you want to create an information product that you can market and sell to people who want to learn to do what you've done, people will pay for your expertise. Imagine if you went to the Home Depot buyer, and the Home Depot buyer gave you a list of 20 people trying to get their product into Home Depot but are just so clueless they don't know how to do anything. And they gave you those names, and you contacted them and introduced them to yourself and told them your story of what you've done and how you've already gotten a product into Home Depot, and you've been through the trials and tribulations, and you've created a course that walks them through everything they need to know to get their product in the Home Depot, these people will pay you handsomely for it.
Oh, yeah. For instance, today, I have a meeting down in Mission Viejo with a gentleman who has a particular lighting fixture. And I saw it 3 months ago. It's a great product. I studied the existing products on the market. There's nothing like it. Cost-wise, it's priced extremely below market, so which would really make it attractive from the consumer level. In other words, we're not competing against the same item or an item similar to it for $44. There is an item there for $44, and ours is $16.95, and it's much more handsome. So I saw a lot of potential in it. I'm meeting with him today. Here is an exact example of what I'm saying. This man came to me and said, John, I've seen your stuff in the stores, and we got to know each other, and at the same time, he became a customer for another product. He buys my lubricant, and we private label for an entirely different industry. This is in all the Michael stores and everything. But he and I got to know each other, and like I said, he had this product, and he said, do you think we could get this in the stores? I said, sure, piece of cake.
All right, and you're going to help him out for free, or are you going to charge him something?
Well, up to now, everything's been for free. Get 2-3 phone calls from this man a day, and we've had several meetings, but until I can actually see, okay, this is where this thing's going to head. I've already shown it to Depot. This is what we can do with it. Now let's talk about what I can get out of this. This is all great and fine, and his office is next door to my favorite bakery. There's all kinds of little things where this is fun, but at the same time, I enjoy getting those checks every month from these companies that I've done business with.
Okay. Well, what are you more interested in learning, how to structure a deal when you talk to these people, or do you want to sell a physical information product? Eventually, you can only meet with so many people every day, and you certainly can't do it for free every day because you've got other things you could be doing that'll make you money. So you could leverage yourself instead of meeting with these people. If this guy had your entire course, whether it was with audio tapes, manuals, whatever, and he had all that information in front of him, he wouldn't have to meet with you. Now, maybe he could meet with you over the phone for a 30-minute consultation, but only after he's gone through your course. If he had your course, he'd have everything he would need to get his lighting product into Home Depot, wouldn't he, if you laid it out for him?
Right, and I did. I spent all day Sunday and laid him out a 6-page. This is exactly what you need to do from A to Z.
Well, see, that could be part of your course. So what I could help you do is give you some guidance in developing, creating an information product, and then you have your tangible product, and instead of selling it to Home Depot, you're going to be selling it to people like that lighting guy or people who are interested in knowing how to get their product into Home Depot. And I'm sure with your contacts, you can find plenty of people like that.
Who typically is your audience?
My audience are marketing people, students of marketing. I've got a very wide range, but it's a very high caliber, high educated, motivated group of mainly businessmen all over the world who are entrepreneurial, who are running companies, who are selling information products, who know how to market or are learning how to market. They all study the same people. I buy and resell hard-to-find J. Abraham seminars, and he is the number one marketing guru in the world. And people who study his stuff have a huge edge over the average people who don't know how to market. And that's my clientele.
You had mentioned doing something on audio tapes or whatever. How is this distributed? Are seminars involved?
No, there's no seminars. You know, I do audio interviews. Like, I've been recording everything we've been saying. So we've been talking probably for about 35, 40 minutes. And you've said a lot of great information about you. Your product is very exciting. It gives you credibility. When you said people come to me and they ask questions about how do I do this, 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 you rattled off almost 20 different questions, which is a great outline for your course. I've captured it. I've got it all now here on audio. I would take this audio and have it transcribed. And as you were talking, it wasn't like you were sitting down trying to write a sales letter. You were just talking to me one-on-one, and you were uninhibited, and it was flowing. So we've captured all that on audio. Now, I could take this audio and edit out all the junk, and you'd have a very powerful lead-generating tool to sell yourself, to sell who you are, your credibility, your story. You just gave me your story. You see? So now we have your story. Now, if you have someone interested in learning how to do what you did, you don't have to talk to them. You could take this and put it on audio tape or CD-ROM, have just a one-page introduction. Let's say you got unlimited leads of people who have developed products and they want to try and get it into the large hardware industry or these type stores. All you got to do is send them your audio tape for 55 cents with a cover letter. Hey, I understand that you invented a product. I know you've tried to get into Home Depot. Well, let me introduce myself to you. It's just a cover letter on this audio tape. I can definitely help you get your product into Home Depot. Listen to this audio tape and whatever. What it is, it's just a tool that leverages your time. It allows you to generate leads. Now, after someone listens to that audio tape, if they're sold on what they've heard on the audio tape that I've edited down and done with you, they're going to call you. Or you will lead them to a more structured sales letter. Or a sales letter will go with the audio tape about who you are and what you can do for them, all the benefits. And then that sales letter is going to sell them on your information product, which is A to Z, how you did it, your story, everything you need to do to get your product in the Home Depot. And you state, if you've got a product that the market wants, I'll show you how to get in the Home Depot. If your product isn't appealing to the marketplace, there's nothing I can do about that. But I can show you how I got my product in the Home Depot and how I solved all the problems and the things needed to. And you can sell that course for $600, for $500, for $300. You can test price, but it's done. I sell books all the time for $375. I had a guy out of Australia who wants to buy one information product for me for $500. You can't put a price on an information product. It's paper and ink. It's worth what someone's willing to pay. And that's a beautiful business to be in.
Well, this is going back several years, back to actually 1978. I was in my 20s, and I developed a product, patented it. Unfortunately, made a huge mistake and committed all my inventory to one distributor back in Philadelphia, which at the time seemed like I had found the end of the rainbow. But the rainbow turned out to be a bust, to be honest with you. Anyhow, I learned a lot from that, but probably where I learned more than anything else was a gentleman who had called me from San Diego, and he was an older gentleman, and he said, I've seen your product, and I have developed something, and I had it taken away from me, and I'd like to talk to you. He said, could you pick me up at the train station? And I agreed to it. Turns out that he was a paraplegic.
How old were you at this time?
26, 27 years
old. Remind me, what was the product that you had?
It was a product called Keylight. Was distributed to Savon, to Ace Hardware, and Pet Boys, and it was an automotive-related product or a house-related product. My life dream was to find something that cost a dollar that everybody in the whole world could use. Everybody has keys, lots of them, key-related products. But anyhow, this gentleman sat in my office. He was the inventor of Vice-Grip. He went to Craftsman or Sears. They looked at it, said, well, maybe we can do something. Maybe we can't. It might sell. It might not. Well, they knew darn well it would sell. So they dangled a carrot in front of his face, which was virtually nothing, and he went away. They sat on the product for about 6 months, developed it into a situation where it was highly marketable. There's over 270 companies worldwide that are licensed by Craftsman to manufacture those Vice Grips. Still have patent on it. Been renewed and renewed and renewed. So every time you see Vice Grips, I don't care if they're at Sears for $10 or at Harbor Freight for $1.99, it's all under the same license. This gentleman literally walked away with nothing, only because they said they would buy it from, but they didn't know that they could do anything with it. But they were willing to throw a few bucks his way.
That happens all the time. Inventors aren't necessarily good businessmen or smart marketers or attorneys or anything. So he told you his story of what happened, and then he taught you how not to let that happen?
Yeah, I learned a lot from him.
What was his name? Do you remember?
I couldn't remember.
Okay.
It's been some time ago.
He mentored you, basically. Were you in touch with him for years after that?
We stayed in touch for a couple years, and it was a very interesting relationship, and we talked several times. I know his first name was Ted, but I don't recall his last name. It was an interesting story that at a young age, I had hooked up with this company back in Philadelphia, and I can remember flying all the way home with a smile on my face that she had to go to the hospital and get rid of. But at the same time, it turned out to be my worst nightmare because these people had me committing to deliveries of millions of pieces, knowing that they were never going to pay me for it. And when they got some arrears as far as payment, their idea was to fly out here and offer to buy the company from me.
Oh, and is that what happened?
That's what they did. I refused to sell them the company. I said, look, the company's not for sale. The patent's not for sale. I just want to get paid the $500,000 you owe me, plus I got $500,000 worth of merchandise sitting in my warehouse. Now, bear in mind, the company was only 5 months old. So here it is, got a $500,000 receivables and $500,000 in payables and $500,000 in inventory. The whole thing spelled disaster.
You have to file bankruptcy?
This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two. Here is another bonus I want you to know about, extremely valuable. If you go to another site of mine called Executive Audio Institute, that's Executive www.audioinstitute.com, all together, no slashes, you will see a site with nothing but all my audio recordings, all in downloadable MP3 form. Now, these are the same recordings that I have on hardtofindseminars.com in the audio clip section, except I will offer you the reprint rights to all of these audio recordings. In other words, I'm going to hand them to you on a silver platter. If you have a website and you need something that generates traffic, I will set up a custom site for you, and you can send your visitors to my collection of audio recordings as a bonus. You have here thousands of dollars worth of audio content on some of the best interviews on the internet. You have hundreds of transcripts that you can print out and share with your customers. I'm not going to charge you a dime for it. I'll even build you a custom site. All you have to do is put a small deposit down, but it's refundable once you introduce it to your list. Go on over to executiveaudioinstitute.com and read the first part. You'll see a link. If you want the reprint rights to these audios, it'll explain everything there. I think you're going to find this extremely valuable. It has taken me years and years to build up this collection, to get them all edited, to put the transcript. I've invested tens of thousands of dollars in this collection, and I want you to have it. Go check it out, executiveaudioinstitute.com.